Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
We're doing this on a Thursday, huh? It's toy department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. It'll probably be Friday by the time anybody hears this.
Yeah. Thursday is when we're supposed to do it, theoretically, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we're coming out ahead on this one.
Right on
How
time.
Are you today? You know, a lot going on in the world, man. How are you?
Yeah. You know, listen, on one hand, my family's healthy, you know. We're doing just fine, all things considered. On the other hand, I, on the radio today, had to yell at a man who called in to explain to us how... Are you familiar with the Black Economic Empowerment, I think, Act, maybe, in South Africa?
In South Africa, I am not. No.
Yeah, it's effectively apartheid reparations, right?
Gotcha.
It's a program that specifically affords advances and job opportunities and so forth to people of color. And it was enacted, you know, by the, like, African Congress or whatever, right after the end of apartheid, as, like, we got to do something to help this community that's been, you know, shamefully... abused for so long, right? We had just finished trying to explain to, you know, angry texters that there's really no such thing, or at least nothing to worry about when it comes to reverse racism, and that certainly there's no institutional racism against white people. And so this man was calling to use... the Black Economic Empowerment Act, which again was reparations for some of the most heinous racism in world history, as an example of systemic institutional racism against white people. That's so that's.
Did he tell him to stick to sports?
I ultimately it ended with me screaming "Hang up" at the man. And either he did or the producers did, hard to say which, but like, he started to like, I, you know, this is a thing I'm vaguely aware of, and he was South African, by the way, and, or at least sounded it. And so, he got halfway into starting to explain how this was an example of institutional racism against white people. And I just interrupted him. Got very angry and shouted him off the air. While I think making a reasonable point about how absurd it was that he was calling to do this.
Yeah. I might be able to top you on
All right.
the score.
I wish I could say that excited me, but go ahead.
So, you know, we wanted to do something on our radio stations this week that felt, you know, good. I know, sounds crazy, right?
Strange time,
and, you know.
It's tough to do.
Yeah. So, you know, we sat around and tried to figure out what's a good thing we could do. And we came up with this idea that it still didn't happen yet. We're still excited about it. Called the Night of Light, where we were going to ask our listeners to turn on their porch lights at 10 p.m. tomorrow night as sort of a symbol of unity for Minnesota. So when people would look outside, everyone would have their lights on, and it would be a sign of, like, togetherness as one, and, like, finally something we could do where everybody is – there's just one side, right? And we took it to the other radio companies in town, and you being in the business, you know how hard it is to get other radio companies to agree to do anything together.
Sure.
And not only did we get every single major company in town to participate, I think even the small ones, around the state, they're doing it. So we're pretty excited about it. We announced it today. Posted about it on Instagram, and I'm like, oh, let me check on Instagram what's going on. First comment on the Instagram post was, are you going to light it up with dildos? Second comment was, that's it. I've had enough of you clowns. First the blackout, now this. I'm unfollowing you. People in 2020, we can't even agree, like we're taking courageous stands against togetherness. Apolitical displays of togetherness. That's where we are. Unity as a concept is controversial. Welcome to 2020.
Yeah, and this is a very non-toy department way to start the toy department, and apologies. But to add on to that, like, I mean, listen, okay? What's really upsetting that person, the second person, I mean, the first person could be any sort of weird troll. That could be anything.
It's not even a good – the dildos joke isn't even a good joke.
No, that's just like an idiot. So it's hard to say if that person even has any real political feelings about the situation. But here to me is what the second person's comment says. It says, I'm uncomfortable with you promoting unity at this time because to me, there's nothing to be – like there's no reason to have such a hullabaloo over black men being murdered by police. That's
right.
What that says, right?
There's like, a couple other things too. So what do I have to gain from this unity? Right? There's a little bit of that.
Yeah, but like,
and then there's generic. I'm unfollowing you. Like, you know, okay, you A. Nobody said you had to participate in this if you don't like it. B. No one said you have to tell us you're unfollowing. Like, just do it, man. You know
See
what
you.
I mean?
Yeah. And by the way,
like, you're not going to be missed.
No, and I'm sure he'll be commenting on the next thing in a similar fashion. And these are the same people who angrily send messages to the text line for 4 straight hours and over the course of that time tell us 3 or 4 times that they're tuning out forever, you know?
Right. And it's really just a sad cry for attention.
Maybe. I think it's that, certainly. But there's also now, it was always that. And now, to me, there's also a menacing specter of, like, I don't even know what the word for it is anymore, but it's this, like, insidious disease of idiocy in our culture where over the last 5 to 10 years in particular, people have been emboldened to speak without facts, to ignore facts, to willfully misrepresent facts, and it just makes reasonable conversation impossible when you do
that. Well, and that's the thing, is right, it's not it is idiocy, but it's really idiocy married with certainty
and pride.
And I think
it's a pride in idiocy, right? It's a pride in ignorance. Like, I don't have to care enough to know about things. I just make up my mind about them without knowing anything.
Learning stuff is for the elites. And right. We're now deeply into a political discussion, but I don't. The thing that shook me about is, like, aren't you tired of just everything through that lens? Like, everything has to be through that lens. Like, turning on your porch light is through that lens now. Like, can't we do one thing that we're just in it together? Like, that seems nice, doesn't it? I don't know. One thing we can do together, right, is talk about some pop culture, right?
Yes,
that's,
sir.
That's a fun thing we can do together.
Please, yes.
Do you mind if we start with the challenge this week?
I don't mind at all. Why not start with greatness?
It's pretty epic. Pretty epic episode of the challenge. In which the elimination showdown that the show has been waiting for damn near 20 years.
20 seasons, right? I mean,
finally came to a head.
It's as long a time coming as anything could have in this sport. And you don't, and I do say sport, you don't see that in other sports, right? I mean, maybe baseball back in the day with ALNL, but like in normal sports, rivals have to go through each other.
It's what makes them rivals.
Exactly. And that's, of course, why part of why the challenge is so special is they can become rivals with their political game and behind the scenes maneuvering and just general douchebaggery. But this was fantastic. It was a great elimination, you know, seemed pretty competitive, although, spoiler alert, it never looked like Wes was going to win.
We didn't actually say he was in it, by the way. It's Wes, was Wes versus Johnny.
For those who are not watching as closely as we are, Wes Bergman and Johnny Bananas Divinenzio. The thing here that was beautiful to me is, excuse me, after 20 seasons or whatever it is of being at each other's throats and coming together this season for the first time, although Johnny's move to throw himself in was, and we talked about this issue last week, right? That there weren't going to be more than two more men's eliminations in all likelihood. Possibly this could be the last one. And so when Wes won, it was a little bit not dirty, but thoughtless, if you will, to his partner. Truce partner, not truce. Alliance.
His alliance, partner. Yes.
It was a little bit snaky. And it was probably equally snaky for Wes to then throw himself in against Johnny when they were in an alliance. But after it was over, they hugged it out and they didn't let the necessities of the game break the bond that they finally formed after all these years.
It was weirdly emotional at the end of that.
It sure was. And did you know there was a point in that post?
And by I didn't mean for them, by the way. I meant for me.
Oh, I feel you. No, I feel the same way. My wife would laugh at both of us, but I'm sure would agree with you that I was overly emotional. And there was a point they like really sat in it after it ended, you know?
Yeah.
The two of them were, and at a certain point, my wife turns to me and goes, where's TJ? Because the two of them were just like standing there, you know, extolling their virtues to each other back and forth and hugging over and over again. And, you know, talking about how they're going to be friends now. But it was like 3 minutes after the elimination ended. Anyway, it was everything I would have hoped for in this inevitable outcome. Because at some point, alliance or no, they were going to be pitted against each other.
Do you buy Banana's rationale that Wes thought it would be better here than have to try to beat him in a final?
I
think that
man.
Was bluster.
I think Wes just – I think Wes honestly, after – talking about it and talking about how he shouldn't do it, he just let ego and the moment get to him and affect his game. And I'm not upset that he did, because it resulted in a great elimination and like an epic challenge moment. I mean, I think this really gives Johnny a pretty solid claim to greatest of all time, you know?
Well, okay, so
I'm not saying he's my pick, but I'm saying he has a solid claim.
I had some issues. I definitely had some issues with TJ's the two best comment.
Didn't he say two of the best?
I'm pretty sure he said the two best.
Huh. Yeah, I mean.
Which I think was hype for the elimination, to be honest, as much as anything. But, like,
yes.
First of all, you can't talk about those two without talking about CT.
That's right. Right?
Like, I mean, that's
he's
an
the guy who's
one.
Obviously missing. And I think if you said those are the three best, I don't know that in terms of men, I don't know that anyone could argue with you.
Yeah, you're right. Because I was trying to think about this, like if I was picked here. All right, so if you were saying like,
I mean, if we're just talking TJ era,
right? Like, okay, well, if you're just talking about, even still, like, because the TJ era is most of the show.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you got to think about Daryl a little bit. Like, Daryl's like a three-time winner, right?
Yeah.
And I think you got to think about, like.
But I mean, how much do you. What kind of points do you get for longevity? Because I think Wes is. Yeah,
longevity matters.
Wes is a three timer, right?
Yeah.
Bananas is six, which is ridiculous.
Bananas has six?
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. I'd still take CT, though, if I wanted to win one.
Well, like, here's the thing. If you get one challenge athlete in their prime to win a season of the challenge. See, I think I take Johnny. Because here's why.
Really?
Well, but here's why, and you're going to agree with me. You have to make a tough choice on CT. Do you take him in his physical prime when he's liable to get kicked off at any moment? Or do you take him in his later mentally advanced prime when he's frankly never in good enough shape? Do you want it's like if someone gave you a choice between the Shaq from the Magic and the Shaq from the Heat. You can't have Lakers Shaq, right? CT, he doesn't have his Lakers Shaq moment because by the time he really calmed down, he just wasn't the same physically.
That's an interesting point. We did leave Jordan out of this discussion, by the way. I feel like probably deserves to be mentioned. He's,
look, if we're talking about today, you know, we're starting a challenge today. Everyone is who they are today. I think Jordan's as good a pick to win as anyone. I mean, he got a brutal break in this season.
Yeah. Also, by the way, if we're just talking about one season, yeah, I think you got to talk about Turbo too, to be honest. I need a guy to win one season.
A little bit out of sight, out of mind, but he's a badass, no question.
He's not in the all time discussion. I also think there are a couple old school guys. Like I think that
Kenny.
You know, we can't talk about Kenny or Evan anymore, but they're in the mix. And then Mark, if you want to go way back, I think you got to talk about Mark
who came back. A couple seasons ago?
Yeah, it came back a couple seasons ago. At like 48 or whatever
Like, he's old.
But like, you know, in his day, when he was in his 30s, he was a pretty strong player.
That's pre-TJ, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I think some of that is pre-TJ. But what about women?
Now that we're doing this.
I mean, women, the Mount Rushmore women is what? Is Carmen Maria's got to be on there. Certainly, yeah. If you're talking about longevity.
I think Laurel has to be on there.
Yeah, Laurel was the next name I was going to say.
Laurel was like CT, but for the ladies in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, exactly. There's somebody I'm forgetting, though, on the women's side.
I think Anissa has to be on that list, right?
I mean, if you're putting, like, Anissa, I don't think she has enough titles.
Maybe not. There's like two Anissas also.
I mean, right, you might as well have Veronica if you're going to have Anissa.
I'm not.
You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't go that far.
All right. I'm looking up the Five Timers Club right now.
Okay.
Oh, this has challenge contestants ranked by prize money, but that really favors recent players.
Yeah.
You know, Camilla might be in that discussion for the women.
You're right. No, Camilla, she only totally lost her mind on a couple of her seasons in a way that, like, ruined it. And she was a competitor, man.
Yeah, dude, six wins for Johnny. That really is something. I feel like we may have shortchanged Derek, too, as a three-time winner.
Yes, little Derek.
Little Derek, yeah.
Derek is in that conversation. He was all, you know what? He's the, like, he's Camilla without the psychotic.
Yeah. Another guy, too, that really calmed down as he got older.
Yeah, but even as a younger guy, like, he was wilder, but he was like the Steve-O kind of crazy, not the, like, I might attack you kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. Exactly. That's fair. And I gotta say, if you're just looking at numbers, he was only on four challenges, but Landon, Four challenges. Yeah. Three wins. Four challenges, three wins.
Landon. Why am I not remembering who Landon is?
He was on the Real World Philadelphia, and he was like a dude from Wisconsin, kind of a bro.
Yeah. I remember Landon. You know, speaking of Landon, Brad probably deserves at least a mention. I don't know that he gets into the top five conversation, but like,
yeah,
he was pretty good. You're right, because Landon felt like a real athlete back in that, you know, relative to the, he'd probably be, you know, average to a degree now in terms of physicality, but like he was a little more cut, a little, he was, that's a great call.
Yeah. Kind of forgotten because he just sort of stopped doing the show, which happens. Yeah. all right. Let's jump back into this episode.
Yeah, wow, that got pretty far afield, but hell.
But you know, I felt like an all-time discussion was sort of necessary in there. I also I understand what you know, because we obviously look, I've been the one talking about they're running out of skulls, guys need to start going in, and it was nice to see more guys going in.
But it
sure seemed like Wes had an easy way out there, right? Like, you just put Corey in. Corey wants to go in. Johnny wants to go in. Nobody's going to get mad. You come back next week, and at worst, you just volunteer yourself to go in. If you feel like you need the skull, people are going to give it to you.
Wes
has had control of this game for weeks, right? Like, he had options.
I actually think I don't think that was the move either. I think the move was putting Swaggy in. Because either way, a friend of yours comes back with a red skull, and you don't have to face either of them.
Yeah, but then Swaggy might be mad at you. Speaking of which...
No, Swaggy wanted to go in.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Then that might have been the move. But still, speaking of which, what is up with Josh?
Dude.
I'm done with Swaggy. Oh, right. It's like, did you not throw a drink at that man in the last freaking episode? What did I miss there?
You just did that, bro. Here's the other thing. It's like, Josh's emotional meltdowns are becoming so predictable that, like, it's an they've always been funny, but it's like a different kind of comedy now, somehow.
Yeah.
And he is – the two most hilarious people on this episode to me were Josh and Kyle, because Josh is like every three episodes, he's just going to fall apart over something and totally lose it, occasionally in back-to-back episodes. And Kyle seems to be the one person in this house who is kind of like, maybe I won't bother with a red skull.
Yeah, he kind of is. It was a little weird how agitated he was about, like, it's like nobody's out to get you, bro, and nobody's really even really thinking about throwing you in, so no. Like, chill out.
It's like, dude, everyone else wants to go in, why are you acting like this?
Yeah, everyone thinks you're hilarious, it's fun. Including me.
He is. Have really, you noticed he's funny
that Melissa seems to just be forming secret friendships with everybody? Like, once a week, Melissa's like, I've really gotten really close with, and it's like someone you've never seen her hanging out with.
But it does make me think that she's just like a delightful social butterfly, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, I don't think he's making it up, but it is. I have noticed that. I'm like, you're really good friends with who now?
Yeah. And some of them are like, okay, well, you both seem to be from reality shows in England, so fair enough. But other times it's like, you know, I've just spent a lot of time with Nani lately, and I just feel like we're really close. And you're like, huh?
Good for you. Good for you, lady.
That seems nice. Okay. Man, Landon, you really threw me for a loop with that one.
Yeah. I got one more philosophical challenge question for you before we move on.
All right.
Do you prefer the trivia challenge or the spelling bee?
That's a tough call. Like, to make that choice, I would have to know the other component. You know,
of like what happens when you get it wrong
how
or whatever, because it's
how
basically
do they fall
the
into
same.
The water. Also, when they talked about, someone was like, "Oh, well, Josh is going to fall just like this," and then he fell exactly like that, right on his face. That was amazing.
They all called him out. He even falls clumsy.
Yeah. Amazing.
So great.
This was a great episode of the challenge.
Yeah, it was. It was. And look, my answer to this, I think, is generally spelling bee, because it's a quicker way to see how dumb everybody is.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but like actually last night's trivia was one of the harder ones they've had. Not because they're like serious academic questions, but because there's just weird stuff. Like questions about the 2019 VMAs. It's like, who watched that? You know what I'm saying?
although It's Always Taylor Swift was a pretty good comment.
That was a good answer. But I would have guessed Billie Eilish, you know?
I would have too. I did, like, you did get the opportunity, like, the ITMs were pretty great in during that thing as well. Like, when,
for sure.
When Natty said elephants laid tiny eggs.
That was one of my favorite challenge moments in a while.
Yep.
Because you don't get these moments often because they're so good. You usually don't have to hear them. Yep. But hearing the producer and the tone and like the producer knows exactly what she's doing, right? Because Nani, the way she says it, she goes, "Well, I know elephants don't lay the smallest eggs, so or the largest eggs rather. I know elephants don't lay the largest eggs, so it's got to be the ostrich or whatever, right?" And then there's like a moment of silence, and you hear the producer quietly go, "Right, and why don't elephants lay the largest eggs?" And she's just like, "Well, they're one of the smallest, right?" It's just like
so great.
And what's incredible about that is first of all, to include elephants is like, I mean, you probably don't think someone's gonna pick elephants as the answer so much as you're expecting that moment in the ITMs, right?
Yeah. No,
and there's there's a brilliance to that.
Like, you knew that the word mammals was just not coming out of her mouth.
No, for sure. And again, the way she says, I know elephants don't lay the largest eggs, was just like, wait a second, you think elephants lay eggs, don't you?
Yeah. And in any other day, that would have been enough. But then you got Nelson doing math.
Oh my God.
And I almost feel bad.
I love multiple choice because I have a 50-50 chance. Yeah, Nelson, but there's three.
He's like,
there's three.
And then he's just like, I'm not that good at math.
And the best part, he could have been like, okay, 1 in 3, my bad.
Yeah. Yep. No, you do. You could see in I've been reading this book actually called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. And one of the things I talk about is you can see in people's eyes when they're using like that second system of thinking that requires like computation.
Right.
And you can just see his eyes like searching for 1 out of 3 and like what kind of percentage that would be.
Yeah. Totally.
What is the, what grade, what's the last grade you think Nelson completed?
Is it rude to guess, like, the second semester of community college?
No, it's not. Because I don't – does he have a GED, do you think? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I bet he has a GED. But, my God, what it really does – look, I mean, I bet – first of all, some of these people went to college. Second of all
– a lot of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Second of all – most of them got through high school. Like, there's not a lot of, you know, total burnouts involved in these sorts of things, right? So this really is a lesson on how easy it is to get through school without learning a goddamn thing.
It kind of is. Kind of is. Oh,
that,
man.
That really is. Like, 33% is, like, you know, I'm starting to teach my one-year-old that. He can't talk yet, but, like, I'm pretty sure he'll know what one out of three is sooner than later.
Yeah,
and,
like,
I don't even know how to, yeah, it's just, he's a very dumb person, Nelson. And
yeah,
beyond that, he has failed to learn anything ever, which is probably even more problematic.
And it's like, it's weird because I don't, you know, I feel bad saying that, but there's just a lot of ample evidence about it at this point. And I want to be like, he's a nice guy, but that's not entirely accurate either.
No, that's the thing. He seems to be
very well. That's what I'll say.
Yeah,
he's very well intentioned.
He is problematic on a lot of levels. And I also think, like, it's one thing to call someone stupid for you know, not having stuff that for whatever reason they may not have had a good opportunity to learn, but like a guy in his mid to late 20s who can't tell you one out of three is 33%, and or who even says in the first place, I got a 50-50 shot on a three answer multiple choice question. First of all, he's using that to tell you, like, the words he's saying are meant to indicate that he does not believe he's very smart, right?
Yeah. Oh, he knows.
He says, I love multiple choice because I got a 50-50 shot. He's telling you he has no idea, that there is no direction based on the question leading him towards one answer or the other in any circumstance.
Sure.
You know? So,
it's true.
Like, that's the starting point here. And he's putting himself on TV doing it. So, to me, like, at a certain point, I can't feel bad calling you stupid because you're asking me to.
Yeah, and then watching those him and Corey try to manipulate Wes. That was,
yeah.
That was, this is gonna go great. By the way, did you catch the commercial for Corey's TV special?
I did.
In
so
the
it's
midst of
Teen
all this,
Mom OG.
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you any more context than that. I saw the same thing you did.
Okay, because the question Joey and I had was, who's the OG? Is it him or his lady?
No, it's the lady. The lady, right. The OGs are the – if this much I know. If you're Teen Mom OG, that means you were on the first season of Teen Mom.
And that has to be – the like, he couldn't have been a father on season one.
Correct.
Okay. So my second question is, where's that child? Because
don't know.
Cause they seem to have his other child with them.
Yeah, don't know.
All right.
Don't know.
Well, I don't think we're ever going to find out, sadly. I mean, somebody will find out, just not either of us.
Somebody listen probably knows. I just, I avoid the Teen Mom universe at all costs.
The fact that we offhandedly mentioned in our pre-show production meeting that somehow, despite my best efforts and protests, Netflix's 13 Reasons Why is entering season 4 as we speak. And I feel like, and to be clear, this is based on nothing more than the name of the show. Teen Mom is an equally abhorrent concept that should not be on TV at all, much less having OG episodes.
Yes, correct. Yeah, there've been lots of Teen Moms, and I don't know. You know, I couldn't tell you what the Siesta Key thing is. But
wow, is it steamy?
Yeah.
Here's what I can tell you about Siesta Key. Hold on, give me a second.
Okay.
I slept with your boyfriend multiple times. That's what I can tell you about Siesta Key.
Yes. She didn't say slept with, however.
No, you're right.
All right, are you ready to move on to Top Chef?
I sure am. On that note, let's move on to Top Chef.
Yes.
And spoiler alert, let me say, the Top Chef gods listen to our podcast. Because they wreaked havoc upon Gregory's back for his illegitimate trip to Italy. And as a result, he see here's when you knew Gregory was screwed. Even though there were a couple other people on the bottom who didn't do a great job with the white truffles, the moment I knew Gregory was done was the moment when he stood over that dish for like half an hour shaving truffle onto it, and then they took a bite and were like, man, I don't taste truffle at all.
Yeah, that's problematic for sure.
Right? Because his dish was, yeah. I think, of the three on the bottom, truffle aside, he may have made the best dish.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, and maybe it threw me off, but when they judged Kevin's dish and the guy said he made a really great meatball,
uh-huh,
and a really great polenta, he just didn't highlight the truffle, I thought, oh, well, Kevin's fine.
See, I thought what he said more was he made a really great meatball and a really great polenta with truffle, but the two together didn't work great.
Yeah, even that, given that there were problems with almost everybody's dish,
right.
I was not worried about Kevin until we got to judge's table. And then I kind of thought he was going home by the end. I was a little surprised when they said Gregory's name. So I don't know. I guess the editing fainted me there a little bit. But some of this, I think, Gregory bears the responsibility for, in that we generally know there's a pretty long hiatus, right, normally between the continental part of the season and the trip over.
True?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So I thought it was really interesting to hear Gregory be like, I don't really know that much about Italian food. Because typically people study up before a final.
Right.
So
not just that, but I think the mistake he made truffle-wise was one of the more obvious ones, because, you know, someone made the comment like, hey, you know, we can spice this up a bit, not just have it with buttered noodles, right?
That was Kevin, yeah. Yep.
But I think Gregory in particular, but really Stephanie and Kevin as well, kind of lost sight of the fact that, yeah, you're here to spice it up, but also there's a reason it's, you know, the classic preparations are all very simple, and it's because it's a pretty delicate thing that is easily overtaken.
Yeah, and so, I think Gregory made a black truffle dish with white truffles.
Yeah, I mean, what the Italian guy said, right, in his beautiful, yeah,
right,
yeah. But I think, yeah, what the you know, once he's sitting over a pot developing those flavors and basically making a stew, like, it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though the stew was good.
Right. But I'm glad. I'm happy for Stephanie, man. I feel like she deserves this, even though maybe she doesn't totally. And
yeah, that was not the feeling I had.
I'm like proud of her. I feel like she's overcome being not the best chef on this show, to be like competitive and do some really good things, and good for her. Also, come on, Melissa's.
But if she wins, you're gonna be away, disappointed, right?
If she wins, she's not gonna win.
Right. Well, she could.
Yeah, you know. I don't think she's gonna. She's really not. If she was like on a roll right now, I'd believe that more. But we're an episode from the finale, and like, she's,
look, she'd have to look into it, but that's kind of what I mean, right? That's why I'm sort of like, you know, like, she's seems like a really good person. Everyone seems to really like her, and I think she did some first rate work in the ITMs this week.
Yes, she did.
She's great there. So like, I enjoy her presence, but you know, she feels like she should be in a different group of chefs than the ones that are currently here.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm okay with that. She's an enjoyable presence, if not totally on the level of everyone else here. I do think no one else here is on the level of Melissa right now. She's just rolling again.
I strongly disagree with that.
You think Voltaggio's hot?
I think you got it. Yeah, I think you need to watch out for Voltaggio because we're getting in. We're in a flavor profile he's very comfortable in, and much more so than Melissa. And I think that we are in that part of the season in terms of the type of challenge that they're going to have, where you're going to have some more freedom to kind of just do your artistry thing. And I think that's a place where he's going to shine. And frankly, I wouldn't count out Kevin either, because I also think
Not counting anybody out. Like you said, even Stephanie could win.
Melissa's been the best of that group this season so far, and I think she's fantastic. I'm a big fan, but I don't know, man.
She's been the best this season somewhat convincingly, though. I mean, Kevin got eliminated, for God's sakes. It took Voltaggio forever to get on the board. Not that they're great chefs, but I don't know. That's like, she has been, other than like a 2-week dip, Melissa has been on fire the whole show.
Yeah, she's been great. I think I don't know that she's cooked that much better than Kevin. Yeah, Kevin got sent home for his like one bad day.
You're right. Part of that's bad luck. But
you know, and then ripped through a murderer's row in Last Chance Kitchen. So
you're right.
You know.
And they're all really good right now. So it's not competitive. But man, Melissa's stuff looked beautiful again. And I have to say, while you're right about the flavor profile probably fitting better with Voltaggio's experience, that can, as it did with the congee, work to Melissa's favor, I think, where she can sort of blow people's minds by bringing her own personal flavor profile to bear beautifully every time, it seems, with whatever the challenge is. So,
unlike Gregory, she seemed to have put some study into how she was going to do that. Like, it seemed like she had a plan for how she was going to combine her cooking with an Italian style.
Yes, and how she could honor the Italian style while preparing food her way. I thought that was you're absolutely right, and that was brilliant. And I think that's why they liked it so much. Because as the guy said, she should never cook salami again. So it wasn't perfect, but she was still, you know, the winner because of the way she respected the Italian flavors, but brought her own personality into it.
I did feel like that was one of the more withering criticisms I ever heard for a winning dish.
That guy was hilariously blunt to everybody.
Yeah. That was great. It was great. Exactly what I would want from some random visiting Italian chef.
Well, and also
a Michelin star restaurant.
It's so funny to hear an Italian man be like, da 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 da. And it's like this beautiful thing, and on the bottom of the screen it's like, don't ever cook salami again.
Yeah, I know, but you're right. It does sound so romantic when he says it.
And I found myself wondering, like, Melissa probably doesn't speak Italian, right? So she's hearing this man do this beautiful, flowery speech about her food. And then some interpreter comes on and is like, the congee was beautiful and the flavors, and this and that. And I really thought it was beautiful, but don't ever cook salami again. And just
what was it?
that must have caught her totally by surprise.
Because I think Padma was interpreting in the beginning, right? And then
we
got subtitles, and then at some point they stopped doing the subtitles for the contestants, but it made it seem like they understood. So I don't know what the editing feat was that was going on over there.
There's a translator there. They just cut him out.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. I would very much like to know, how much does it cost to get one of those truffle dogs?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Right. Because
so like
that
what?
Seemed like an incredible amount of money worth of truffles that they were just fishing out of the woods.
It really
like,
did.
No sweat.
And also, like, whose woods are those? How does this work? Is the reason those that like family is the truffle family? Is it because they own the land on which truffles grow? Are there just like national parks in Italy where people go hunting for truffles and the best hunting dogs find the most ones? Are they like actually secretly abundant in like, I have so many questions about white truffles in particular.
Because they started talking about the value of those truffles, right? If it was just anybody could go and get them, then like there would be no poor people in Tuscany, right?
Right. And it's a few thousand dollars a pound or something like that.
Yeah.
And
even
granted,
they were
even
talking about, they even made the joke about how much money Gregory was like spending when he was like shoveling the truffles on there. So
yeah, it's a fascinating question. The dog can't be cheap, or maybe it's a matter of the training, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's hard to train the truffle dog, but maybe. I want one.
It is very cool, and it does make me wonder, should I be like going into the Berkeley Hills and looking for mushrooms or something?
You might, you know? Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps.
Yeah. when is white
really great
truffle season? Do we know?
We do not. I'm sure Google could tell us.
I feel like Tuscany and California have similar weathers.
Yeah. You know, it's a very Mediterranean climate in the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
That's why they grow the wine up there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about.
Did you stick with Betty at all, by any chance?
Yes.
Very good mushroom subplot in Betty the last couple of weeks.
Was that the last episode? I saw that one with Kurt.
Yeah, with Kurt and the rat and
the rat. You know, Per Stephanie is Kurt is an incredible television character.
Yeah,
and I assume that the young lady is just a skateboarder or something.
I think so. I'm really enjoying the hang of that show.
It's just that's all it is a hang. But I agree.
Yep. And they kind of just sort of silently dropped in there that she's like a runaway.
Yeah.
One of those episodes, it was like just sort of offhanded. And it was like, oh, well, that makes some sense.
Well, that's one of the things about the hang is you don't know much about any of the characters. At most, you've gotten like a little taste of each, you know? This last episode, it seems like maybe Kurt just like crashes with chicks, whatever chicks she can find at any given moment, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I sort of, but it's like you don't know much about any of them, but they're all really compelling and interesting young women. And
yeah, although I gotta say, Kurt to me really stands out.
Yeah, she does.
I mean, that,
she does.
Yeah, she could. She's extremely funny and very specific, but also seems incredibly genuine.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, she reminds me of no one I've ever seen on TV before.
Agreed. Which is another thing I like about this show. You know, it's not a thing that I think people are talking about, and I have no idea if anybody's watching it, but I'm all in on Betty. It's one of my favorite watches right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Space Force. We eventually did discuss the rest of Upload, right? Like, we had watched all that by the end, right?
I think so, yeah.
Did you get a very similar vibe from this? It's another Greg Daniels show where it's like, I like the people in this and the idea is pretty good. Like, why don't I like this more?
Kind of. But the one thing I would add is I did laugh a lot.
Oh, you did? I didn't laugh enough. I threw Upload in there because I had that general feeling. But I thought Upload got a lot better as it went along. And I haven't watched a ton of these yet. But I'm not sensing that kind of growth is going to occur with Space Force. I feel like it feels like it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really dumb jokes, but I am laughing. I don't think I liked Upload more. I don't think it has the emotional resonance of Upload. It feels sort of, honestly, if I was going to compare it to something, it would be, I would like call it with in the most complimentary way possible, a low rent Veep.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Where it's
oddly enough, there's another low rent beat set in space, right? It's the what was that show called?
Avenue 5. Yes. Yes. To me, it's mm-hmm. much more Avenue 5 than it is Upload. Because there's really no emotional resonance whatsoever.
Correct.
And it's really, correct. It doesn't seem to care for or about that. So you're getting like a lot of dumb jokes about the government and space, which
yep.
I found pretty funny to be pretty funny dumb jokes, but that is what it is.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the reviews I've heard centered around kind of Steve Carell's character not working, and I didn't really have any problem with the guy that Steve Carell was doing. I didn't feel like he needed to be calibrated, you know.
No, that's not the problem for me. Although, yeah, look, I mean, Steve Carell, I think, brings a certain Steve Carelliness to pretty much everything. But that's who he is. I don't know why you'd complain about that.
No.
So, yeah, I agree. I don't think there's anything particular wrong with it other than it is what it is, which is kind of a dumb joke show about space.
Yeah.
And the government. And I think, to a degree, there's some poignant stuff about the government, but it's cloaked in absurdist comedy.
Yeah. I could enjoy Side-Eye from Malkovich all day, though.
He's funny. What is the accent he's doing?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's what I said when my wife asked me the same question.
Yep. In a world where a lot of shows really do require your full attention these days and are not like you can be on your phone, I feel like this is a you can be on your phone show.
Totally. Yeah.
Not the worst thing in the world. Not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's not bad. And like I said, I laughed a decent amount. But not much to it.
No. Can you hear my dog snoring?
No, but that's pretty loud.
All right. I want to jump in on and ask you about Rami because okay. you were not super excited to check out Rami. So I'm curious to see where you landed with that. Did you kind of jump ahead to season two? Because I know you didn't really finish season one.
Yeah.
And I feel like you would be very angry with me if I made you watch like six Ramis and you didn't like it. So, yeah, where'd you land?
It's just not for me. I don't even necessarily know why. It's fine. He's pretty funny. I get it. And like, I don't mean to be reductionist at all when I say like there was a lot of masturbation humor in this episode
there was a lot of masturbation humor, that's correct,
and it's funny masturbation humor, you know, no shade, but also like I was not moved to watch a lot of this show.
Gotcha. Did you watch the second one?
I did not.
Okay. A lot more Mahershala
I was both impressed and surprised to see Mahershala Ali in what I thought was a pretty, you know, low on the totem pole Hulu show.
Off the beaten path. Right. Got a lot of really good reviews season one, so I think
and I
picked up some notice.
I don't have any really bad things to say about it, other than I didn't want it's not that long, and I didn't let the second episode play.
So I'm kind of more, I thought this was a funnier and more because it's not just a comedy. I thought it was really sharp and interesting about a lot of things. I like, you know, seeing this world that is somewhat foreign to me and yet a fairly common existence in America these days.
Yeah.
On screen. I really sort of actually enjoyed that part, not just from not so much from like a ooh, yay representation standpoint, but more from a like, oh, this is interesting kind of standpoint. And there's a lot of humor that's very specific to the Muslim experience that can often be kind of funny. So,
yeah, I laughed. I don't know. I don't know what it is. This is not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. By the way, a very good bit on the correct way to pronounce Muslim in the
second episode.
Episode two. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, and I'm with you. Like, I'm glad Rami gets a show. I got nothing against Rami. I'm just probably not going to be watching it.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. I don't know about you. I have a feeling though. I really enjoyed Love Life,
which is Love Life.
Yeah, the last show. I only watched two. So I guess the third one's really good.
I mean, I thought they were all really good.
Did you? But not? Yeah, I did not. No, I really liked them both. Yeah. Both the ones that I watched. I mean, Anna Kendrick's a delight.
When is she not?
My boy Scoot.
Oh, love Scoot. I mean, Scoot gets a real meaty thing to do here.
Yeah, sure does. Sure does. And I thought the story was is interesting and well told. The narration, I think, is really good.
Really funny. Did you say this was an anthology show?
Yes, as I understand it, it is.
So now that makes sense to me, right? Because if each season is a series of, you know, theoretically, the seven episodes leading up to the eighth episode where they fight, right? Because one of the things in the beginning was people are likely to have seven, you know, relationships before they find the person they're selling to, right? Whatever it is. So if each season is a different subject with the sort of seven formative experiences leading up to them finding love, I think that's a great idea for a, I mean, it's like a, it's a very Netflix idea. It's like a, it's a permanently ready to go romantic comedy vehicle, sort of, right?
Right. And from a scheduling standpoint, you can get movie stars. Because they don't have
limited
that
series,
big a commitment.
Not a big commitment.
Yeah, you know what
exactly,
I mean?
Right. Yeah. And here's the thing about that: all you need is one, and that's what you prove here with Anna Kendrick. You get the one charming subject to be the centerpiece of the show, and boom, it's not hard to make a great show.
Yeah, yeah.
She is so unstoppably charming.
Yeah, and like. Effortlessly too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like there is zero flop sweat in the charm of her performance.
It's a great point because it's so easy doing the sort of stuff that she does to be cloying and obnoxious. And she always seems to strike just the right tone of, you know, on one hand, a little too good to be true. On the other hand, just a normal girl.
Yep. There was a moment in the second episode where they, you know, spoiler alert, where she and Scoot have broken up and she's riding back on the subway by herself, and just a tremendous moment where she just kind of like allows herself to break for like half a second and then kind of like picks it up, you know, alone in the subway. And I was like, this is just a, you know, like who hasn't been there? After a breakup, you know what
totally.
I mean?
Totally. Well, and also, as far as Anna Kendrick goes, like, that's what I think is special about her, is that she can be the romantic comedy lead and do all of the sort of cheesy things that are involved in being that. But she brings a certain authenticity to these roles and a certain level of acting that usually you don't get with those sorts of parts.
Yeah,
like she's capable of a really higher level of thing, and she flexes it even in things like Pitch Perfect. You know what I'm saying? Where it's just like there are dozens of Hollywood women who you could cast in Pitch Perfect and probably still sell a lot of tickets, but it wouldn't be as good a movie.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. 100%. Anna Kendrick fan club over here. What'd you think of HBO Max?
Love it. I think
you're
it's
all in.
All in. I mean, to me, it's a better over-the-top streaming service than any I've seen. Because that's not what Netflix is. But to me, just like UI-wise, and also just like breadth of offerings, it's better than anything other than Netflix.
Yeah, it needs more original stuff, but I agree.
But that's
like,
going to
come,
a user right?
Experience,
and it has
yeah, supposedly
all,
it's coming. Yeah.
Well, but and it has HBO original stuff. So,
right.
You know, HBO is in a bit of a slow month with, given that you and I are not watching. I Know This Much Is True, or is Westworld still on? I don't even know. But
I think Westworld's done.
So yeah, this is like a bit of a slow month for HBO. But you know when. What is it? Lovelace County?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lovecraft.
Lovecraft.
Country.
That's coming out. You know, like all the stuff that's coming to HBO is going to be on HBO Max. So even if HBO Max originals per se are a little slow to trickle out, the offerings on HBO Max are still excellent.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little weird, obviously, because it's so redundant of HBO Go.
Of course.
You know. So it's like, yeah, everything you said is true, but it's like, that's also true on this other app that's over here. But you're right. It is a good place to watch HBO. There is some good other stuff. And that's why for me, and it's easy to use, which is why for me, it's like you throw some more original stuff on there. And it starts to feel a little bit more like, oh, maybe this is definitely something I really need to have.
Yeah. Well, see, I was already watching HBO through HBO Now because I don't have a cable subscription to do HBO Go. So this was
gotcha.
Basically free for me. And
right, and this is free for me too. If you have HBO,
then you get it anyway. So it's
then
just
you get it, yeah.
This is just like a boost to what HBO is already giving me, and I'm all for it.
Yeah. I am too. I certainly like it better than Disney Plus.
It's
not enough kids.
It just runs 1,000 times smoother. And there are way more things, yeah, like to your point, there's way more things you and I want to watch as opposed to Disney favorites.
Yes, and Marvel movies.
Yeah, well, that hurts the appeal of Disney Plus for you, is your lack of interest in Marvel.
Yes, or children's shows.
Well, right, but
knocks a lot out for me.
Most adults, I think, their interest there lies in Star Wars and Marvel, and neither of those is particularly your speed.
Yeah, correct. All right, you ready for homework?
I sure am.
I'm pretty psyched for this I May Destroy You, speaking of HBO slow periods.
Yeah, so that'll be on HBO Max.
Yeah, and I don't have any I just really enjoyed the trailer.
Yeah.
that's pretty much it.
It seems like maybe there's a sort of rape culture thing happening. And Michaela Cole is very interesting. So I'll check it out.
She's a very compelling screen presence. I didn't watch Chewing Gum, but I've always heard really great things about it. So,
didn't we? And we watched that other show that she was in, the British show.
Oh, right, with where she was like
an investigator about war crimes.
Yeah,
blood. What was
the war crime show?
Yeah, it was a tough
one. That was a tough one. Tough hang.
But she was tremendous in it.
You sure was. Sure was. It's weird. The rape culture show was going to seem lighter, I feel.
Yeah, I think that's actually true, unbelievably.
So, I don't know. You know, there's shots in this one.
But I do think she, you know, chewing gum is the one that she, I believe, like co-created, which is a little more similar to this.
Where do I find that? I feel like maybe I should go back and check that out.
I think that's on Netflix.
Oh, all right. Then we're also going to do the new run
on Netflix.
Yeah, I believe so. All right, we'll find it. We're also going to do Run the Jewels new record, which I think you've already spent some time with.
Yes, I have. With any luck, my vinyl will be here by the time we discuss it again.
Feels like a record for this current moment, for sure.
Yep. Timely is a good word.
And ESPN's doing a new doc, because what else are they going to do?
Yeah, we didn't talk Lance, because you didn't ever watch it.
I didn't watch it.
See if you can watch it for next week. Otherwise, maybe I'll just throw in 2 minutes about it before we talk about Bruce Lee.
All right, that sounds good. I'm gonna give it a run. But yeah, B. Water's the new Bruce Lee doc, and I'm definitely kind of interested in this one.
Yeah.
Because I just think he's a super compelling subject. So,
Be Water.
Yeah. Be Water. Sunday night on ESPN. And that, I think, wraps us up, right?
Yeah. And of course, the latest episodes of The Challenge and Top Chef. And we're getting near the end of both, but especially Top Chef. So enjoy it while it lasts, folks.
I'm getting sad about this.
It is sad. It is sad. But yeah. We got some time. We got some time to adjust to it. No time for you before going to sleep, though. It's past your bedtime. You go to bed. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.